Welcome to another episode of the Data Topics podcast. Today we'll be talking about edge AI, figure out what that means. Around the table, we have Guillaume, Jeroen, Murillo, and myself. Care to present yourselves? Maybe Guillaume, you go first.
Yes, so I'm an application engineer for Flanders Make, mostly working on computer vision. I also do integration of hardware setups, which means that sometimes I have to integrate like edge AI onto the demos. I'm mostly in the labs all the time, so doing research.
Welcome. Jeroen?
Yes, hi everybody. My name is Jeroen. I'm the co-founder of AI Blocks. 2 years ago, we saw that AI was not only happening in the cloud anymore, but a lot of edge AI use cases were coming up. And yeah, from that observation, decided to start a company, basically helping companies to support them in the infrastructure that is needed to run edge AI projects.
All right. Visionary.
Yep.
And I'm Rillo. I'm a tech lead AI at DataRoots, doing a bit of AI here and there, including edge stuff. Have also some maybe controversial opinions, not about edge AI, but, you know, everything around and like how I think that edge AI is going to become more and more relevant in the future.
All right. Controversial opinions. We like that.
No, this will be fun.
Yeah. First things first, maybe what are we talking about when we talk about edge AI? Anybody care to give a stance?
Yes. So edge AI is basically, instead of running artificial intelligence or just machine learning on the cloud, you will just do it on a small device next to whatever process you're running. This can be a phone, this can be a special board, this can even be a normal computer. As long as it's running an AI model not in the cloud, it's edge.
All right, everything non-cloud is edge.
Yes, and just maybe sometimes you have, like, you can have a device that makes an API call to the cloud, and then you have the machine learning running there, and then it comes back, right? Like, that's not what we're talking when we say edge ML or edge AI, right? So a good example is like the Alexa devices. And if there's someone who's listening on a speaker, maybe their Alexa went up, because that happens to me all the time. But it's like Alexa, whenever you say Alexa, then there is an edge model there that detects the word Alexa, right? So that's edge. But everything you say after that, that's not edge. It actually sends something, an API call to AWS, and that's when it has the more powerful stuff, right? So there is already an interesting, a very clear difference there, right? Like, you have a model that runs on the edge, but the only thing it does is detect when you say Alexa. So it's very simple. And then everything else, the understanding, the search is going to happen somewhere else. So already alludes a bit to the challenges that you have with edge ML stuff. So it's not for everything. So you mentioned your phone, which could be, right? But I think if I'm developing an application today, it doesn't mean, like, just because it's a mobile app doesn't mean you have to do it on the edge, right? So just to add a bit to it.
Yeah, I think that's true. As from the moment that the ambition is to bring intelligence, yeah, closer to the data source and process it locally. And that's when you talk about edge computing. And for me, looking at it from a business perspective, I kind of see it as everything that is happening in the real world. So bringing AI to the real world often happens in an edge context. And so that's how I try to visualize it. But as you say, Murillo, there's a lot of different kinds of edge computing and edge processing, and it comes in all shapes and colors.
Talking about the shapes and colors, so there's a reason we started looking into edge AI. What advantage does edge AI bring over traditional AI or cloud-based AI solutions?
I think in terms of privacy, you know, if the stuff is running there, you're not sending somewhere else, and people, they appreciate having these things there. I think with ChatGPT, LLMs going crazy, you also see a surge of projects that is like private ChatGPT, you know? So basically, instead of, well, ChatGPT, if you send something there, there's actually whole infrastructure with a lot of GPUs to actually run there. It's like you're not running on your laptop for sure, but you could get a model like an LLM model and run your own machine, right? Which there are some challenges to it, and there are some very interesting applications. But one of the ways that this is advertised is that the privacy standpoint, right? So you basically have model weights, which basically just kind of tell you how you should do things, but then you run everything on your laptop. Nothing actually leaves your laptop. If you shut down the internet connection, everything still works, right? So I think that's, and also, like, yeah, there's a lot of ethical maybe questions about LLMs. You know, if you send a response or something, is OpenAI going to use to retrain that model? You know, and all these things. And even regardless of what they say, I think there are some people that are a bit skeptical and they try to stay away from it. So having something running there, it's a big plus in the privacy standpoint.
I can imagine if, I mean, especially with Alexa, I wouldn't want Alexa to listen to everything I'm saying or send everything I'm saying at home to the cloud. So I'd be happy if that's running locally.
Yeah.
And only scanning for the Hey Alexa or Hey Google, or let's not be vendor specific. So, okay, that privacy, I see. Any other clear advantages?
Yeah, speed. Latency is definitely one of the big advantages of running AI on the edge. I mean, there has been massive investments in the cloud, economies of scale. Think about the whole automation. Everything is almost self-service. But there's still limitations to that. There's the transfer of data. There's just physical limitations to what you can do in the cloud and communicating back and to the cloud. And that's where Edge brings you the solution, because you can process data locally and you can do it very, very fast. And there's a lot of use cases that actually need that speed. So in those circumstances, Edge is going to be the solution.
Yeah. So maybe to add a bit, I think I agree. I think when we say, well, real-time applications, latency, right? That's usually we talk about latency when we're talking about real-time. I think then it depends a bit on the actual use case, right? So if you have something like a defect detection that needs to be triggered at that moment, like, for example, the Alexa, going back to the Alexa example, I think it's fine if you wait a couple of seconds, right? But there are some applications that that's just not an option, right? You need to make a decision right there. And I think, yeah, indeed, the latency to send stuff back and forth can be a bit overwhelming at times. Even though I could also argue that if you can afford a couple of seconds, sending stuff to the cloud can be way faster because you have GPUs on the cloud available. Right. So if you're having something running locally and it takes a long time, you could say, well, I'm going to actually not do this on the edge, do this on the cloud, because then I can leverage GPUs and whatnot. I think it is a bit use case specific, but I think, yeah, if you need something very real time, then having on the edge is one of the, that's when you see most need there.
Yeah, like process monitoring. That's sounds like one of the best applications of Edge AI. Temperature monitoring, and then if it's too high, you go down, and that you don't want to send to the server and then wait for 2 seconds and come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even like defect detection or something, you know, have something going, like there's a production line going there super fast, right? Like, or
the best example I always use when trying to explain this to my friends, for example, is a self-driving car.
Mm-hmm.
You need to decide really, really fast. If not, you will hit something.
Yeah, that's true. I think maybe also on those same lines as well. I think if you don't have internet connection, because that's a given, right? I think we live in a very connected world, but like, I don't know, let's say you're a farmer and you need to have something there. You don't have internet connection. It's not available. So then I think then it becomes more relevant to have something running on the edge as well.
All right. So we have privacy, we have latency, stable connections indeed, or if for a time you have no connection and you need still to have those immediate decisions, it's practical if it runs locally. So I hear the benefits. You mentioned self-driving cars. What are some of the other use cases where you typically see this being implemented? You said process monitoring, self-driving cars. I guess there's many more.
There's a lot of industries. It's a generic technology, so yeah, you could apply it everywhere. But today, where we see the adoption of Edge AI is happening, it's mostly in an industrial context where you have projects which have a clear return on investment. There's still, it's new technology, so it still requires quite some investment in software, in hardware, in development. But in an industrial context, there's often a huge return as well. So that's where today, at least, I see a lot of new projects popping up.
Yeah, I would also add to that for big software companies like Apple, privacy of users, there they will also use Edge AI, for example, to scan people's phones. If you airdrop something to people, if there's nudity in them, for example, they will do things like this, but they don't want to send this information to the cloud, of course. That would be, well, I don't have to explain, I think. Yes, for example, these things also, they have an AI model that scans all the pictures.
So different industries, different reasons, but then especially an uplift in or an important stake in manufacturing and make industry in general.
Yeah, I think they over the past years, they invested a lot in making their processes more lean and optimizing all of that. But yeah, also there are limits to what you can do. And here with HCI, there's a new era, there's a new technology that can that enables them to make the next step in terms of efficiency and productivity. And yeah, in an industrial context, that's just so important to stay on, to increase that productivity all the time.
Yeah, to keep on getting more and more competitive or keeping your competitive edge.
Exactly.
Yeah, I also think that the industrial manufacturing, all these things, there are, I mean, maybe this is my bias, but I also see some use cases mainly on that. I think like detecting defects, I think I mentioned this earlier. I think it's a very clear, very easy to put it on the balance. You know, how much does a defect cost us? How much would it cost to implement? How long it take? And I think that's a very well-scoped use case for that. So I see like most of the actual industry applications are in the manufacturing.
Yeah, where you have a line, stuff is coming through and you need to take immediate action if there's a defect and exactly. You don't want a full batch to be...
Exactly.
So there's a clear business case.
Yeah. And you want to keep track of where the defects are happening in the line and on which product and what happened to that product. So
yeah, which kind of checks all the boxes, right? Like it needs to be split second decision, low resource environment, right? You're not going to have a server GPUs on every factory, right? Maybe sometimes you don't have internet connection as well. So in terms of reliability. So I think these are... in terms of industrial commercial applications, I think that's something that I see as a consultant.
So make, yes, privacy, you mentioned. Actually, Alexa is also a bit more privacy related, I suppose. I suppose that the reason that they do it is in part because they don't want to record the entire conversation of people at home.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
So do I, just to be clear. But then let's say, I don't know, banking, financial services, do we see any cases there? Retail, do we see any cases there? Are there other, if you look at the other industries?
Yeah, so when the one thing I see, a general trend, and it's not necessarily edge AI, but I think a lot of these techniques that were developed for edge AI, you know, they can be used in other places. So when I'm being more concrete here, there is also the meme, like if you have a neural network and it's not working well, just add layers and it will be okay, you know? And I think one of the ultimate was like BERT, which was huge. And then ChatGPT, bigger, you know, like everything's just layers, layers, layers. The models are getting bigger, bigger, and bigger. And I feel like we're pushing the limits a bit. And I think ChatGPT is like, wow, this is super cool, super powerful. But I think people are kind of taking a step back and saying, okay, but how can I run this on my laptop? How can I run here? How can I run there? And there are different ways you can make this model like smaller, right? There are different techniques so you can fit in your machine, so you can make the inference time faster. So inference time being the time that it takes to create a prediction based on your input. And I think those things are very generic, right? So for example, if you use ChatGPT, you have a cost per prompt, right? But if you also have a service, you have a big model, you have a cost per GPU. If you could potentially shrink the model and make it faster to make the inference as well, you could run on more normal, quote unquote, hardware, which will make things cheaper for you also in the long term if it's something that you use constantly, right? So I think that benefit is something that you can use in any industry, right? And I think, to be honest, and this is controversial opinion, maybe number one, drum roll. Do you have the drum roll there? I think AI is getting easier and easier to do. Like we had AutoML, now we have these pre-trained models like Hugging Face. I think the time that you had to kind of do something more custom was with unstructured data like an API or computer vision. And nowadays we have a lot of pre-trained models, Hugging Face came with like the hub and everything. And I think the challenge, the main challenge today is one, creating these applications that use these things. So I think that's the human touch. But I also think that the main challenge is the edge stuff indeed. So like making sure that the stuff is runnable on everyone's device, right? So we don't have infinite compute, or some people almost do, right? But we don't want that. So we made like a peak. Okay, this is possible, but now the requirements are insane. Can we reduce the requirements and still get something?
Which is a bit sustainably friendlier.
Ah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
But and how far are we on that journey? Because to have those models run locally, they need to be a lot smaller. How does that translate to performance? Or is performance not so much of an issue?
Well, there are different ways. So one thing I haven't looked into it myself very in depth, but I've heard people, very smart people that did look into this, that big models like BERT, they're huge, but they're actually not that optimal. So there are ways that, there are a lot of weights that are almost negligible, that you can ignore them and the model will still perform very well, but the inference time will decrease because there are less weights that you need to go through, mathematically speaking. So that's one thing you could do that increases performance and reduces the size, right? So I think, if you have a slimmer model in general, in terms of memory, the performance tends to be better as well. So these things kind of go hand in hand, in my opinion, even though they don't necessarily have to, I guess. The tricky, I think there's also some other interesting projects, there's one called Llama CPP, which someone took PyTorch models, they rewrote it in C++ to be able to run on Mac and actually run. I tried it out and it works, but the performance is not as good, right? So there is a penalty cost. And I think trying to make these things more efficient is the game we're playing. And on the other side too, I know that there is stuff that you can do to run on hardware specific. So Mac, I think they have the Metal GPU or they have the Apple, I don't remember the name, but it was a specific chip, hardware wise to be able to do this linear algebra computations faster. And I think then it gets very specific to Mac M1s. Then you have the Linux thing, then you have that. And once you try to achieve the higher performance, sometimes you need to touch on these things, which is something that I see active developments as well.
So there's a software part and there's a hardware part. Switching to the hardware part, maybe, because Jeroen, you guys were 2 years ago, you jumped on the wagon because you did see a need. How do you see that performance increase from a hardware or infrastructure point of view?
I think the availability of low power, but very performant and affordable processors has enabled the whole move to the edge, right? That has been the starting point, because without that, you cannot even start running a project. So yeah, that has been, of course, very, very important. We, for example, work with the NVIDIA Jetson modules. And, linking it back to the sustainability point, I'm also convinced that edge is the key to having a more sustainable AI, because let's be honest, it's still controversial, right? The big server parks eating a lot of energy for ChatGPT and other big models. When going to the edge, you need to be more efficient. You need to shrink down the models, and running it on the edge kind of forces you to enter into a more sustainable mode. So yeah, I'm quite convinced that the future of AI has to be on the edge for a big part, not for everything, but it will make it much more sustainable.
I guess it doesn't need to be literally on the edge, right? But it could be on less powerful machines, for example, or less compute hungry models, right? We could still have a server on the cloud. We could still make API calls, but that server is not going to be with a billion GPUs or TPUs or whatever, right? I think that's what I mean as well, that the mechanisms that people created to be able to run stuff on the edge is very applicable everywhere, right? Which I think is something exciting.
Yeah, but if you take the example of the self-driving car, there's so much calculation going on. It's taking into account everything around the car. That's not a small edge device, right? There you're talking about a significant machine in every car to be able to do that. Or am I seeing it wrong?
Yes, you can see also that every car basically has or a big partnership with NVIDIA or makes their own big chips, specially designed to have 8 or 16 video streams from all the cameras for every sensor, for the LiDAR sensors. These cars are not running normal compute hardware and they have to be very efficient because now they become electric, so they run off a battery. So the more processing you do, the more your range is decreasing. So efficiency is also a big part of this new edge technology in the cars.
Yeah, because our cars are already kind of today big computers, basically, right? So
It is. And today we're in an era of excitement, I would call it. So we don't bother too much about sustainability or the energy consumption, because we see all of the possibilities and all of the new projects and all of the things we can do. So let's first indeed do that and find out what we can or cannot do with this new technology, and I'm sure a new phase will enter where we will further optimize every aspect of edge technology. But today it's still a bit too early, I think.
Maybe you also mentioned the cars and how they have a powerful machine as well. One thing, maybe open question for everyone. I'm not sure if anyone knows this, because I suspect that yes, it has a powerful machine. Maybe it's more powerful than my MacBook. Well, but like sometimes to put in perspective, I suspect that to run a ChatGPT model, it would still be way more than the Teslas that we have out there. And that's what I wanted to check, because I do have the impression that yes, it's a computer, but in terms of, you think of sustainability and all these things, I suspect that the amount of compute power we have to invest to, one, train the model, and two, to actually run, because these models are huge, like incredibly huge, right? It still doesn't, like, if you it would still, my suspicion, again, correct me if I'm wrong, my suspicion is that it would still be more environmentally friendly to have autopilot on cars than to have everyone talking to ChatGPT every day.
I think so as well. Because if you look at ChatGPT, well, nobody really knows how much or how big the model is, but like rumors say it's more than 100 gig plus of VRAM on the GPU. But like on your car, you don't have 100 gigs of VRAM. You can be pretty sure of that. So, and also, again, these cars, chips are made to be efficient, so they work very well with like the kind of instructions that you put in the car. You know what the chip is good at, so you will optimize your models for these. But ChatGPT, this model was trained 5 years ago and is running on NVIDIA A100s of today. So the chance that ChatGPT was optimized for the current GPU architecture is pretty small, but it works and it's. And the GPUs are fast, so it does. It's no problem.
And it's cool.
And it's really cool.
On Edge, what are the main limitations today? So we mentioned, okay, you need to be able to shrink your models. It needs to be able to run on your Edge device. Your Edge device might need to have sufficient performance capability to do so. Are there any other limitations still? Is it how mature is it as a technology today?
Yeah, I know in terms of frameworks, I know there are a couple, but I don't know if there's one that is the standard, like a big one, like, oh yeah, you're gonna do MLOps, you're gonna do ML on the Edge, then you use this, like how PyTorch and TensorFlow is for deep learning. I don't know if there's one thing for, I know ONNX, which is the Open Neural Network Exchange, which is a different format, which I hear that it's more lightweight because it's really just for running inference. It's just so like TensorFlow, it's a more bloated, right? It has a lot of functionality there that you don't need. And ONNX is supposed to be very lightweight, supposed to be a conversion file format kinda that you can run. And it's lightweight and it's going to be faster, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the one that I hear the most. I know there is like one from NVIDIA, there TensorFlow has some stuff from the Edge, but to me, it's not very clear that there is a winner. I think even on the, in terms of cloud providers, I know that AWS has a SageMaker Neo thing, which is kind of compiles your models to the architecture that you're going to be deploying in, which is like Apache TVM. So there are a lot of different things that, at least for me, that I'm kind of looking from afar. I don't see a very mature ecosystem yet.
I can confirm that. We also see that. And we also see that a lot of our clients suffer from that, right? Everybody's trying to find out. They're fooling around and trying stuff, which is good because that gives you results at some point. But it's very difficult to, you know, find the best solution for your use case from the first time. So there's a lot of trial and error still involved. I always try to visualize the AI value chain in, let's say, 5 layers where you have the AI model, you have the data part. But then there's a whole infrastructure which comes down to hardware, which comes down to having a software architecture that allows you to run the model, but also includes a fifth element, and that's an operational layer. And you need all of that to have a good edge AI infrastructure. And for all of those specific elements, you see various initiatives and companies jumping on it and trying to solve pieces of the puzzle. And I think it's a normal evolution, right? That in this stage where the technology sits, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of things happening in the next couple of years. And it's super interesting to see where people think stuff can be improved.
Yeah, I also think that like the software package that you're going to use very much depends on the hardware that you have. So, for example, NVIDIA Jetson supports PyTorch. So you can use a PyTorch model and just deploy it on a Jetson board. Normally, it shouldn't be too much of an issue. But if you have a phone and you want to make an app for iOS and Android, then you will probably choose TensorFlow Lite because it has support to deploy in both. And if you only make an Apple like application, then it's you're probably just going to use the Metal API and whatever. And then, so I think it's very hardware dependent. And also, you're not going to deploy your TensorFlow Lite model on an autonomous car. That's not going to happen. So, and ONNX indeed is very nice because it's very portable and you can convert most of the models to for a TensorFlow model to an ONNX and then to a PyTorch. You can, it's very flexible in that way and it's compatible with most of the libraries. So that's very handy to use.
Yeah, maybe if everything is very hardware dependent, do you think there's going to be a winner, let's say? Because sometimes I feel like the winners in these competitions, I mean, doing air quotes for people that are just listening, it's like it's a tool that kind of addresses a lot of different scenarios, right? But I feel like if you have like one thing that is just for mobile applications, one thing that is for, I don't know, I forgot the example you gave me actually, but like you mentioned TensorFlow Lite, if it's on the browser, this and this and this, right? I'm wondering if there will be one go to like one industry standard, like this is the way that you should approach edge AI.
Well, I think ONNX is well on the way to be something like this because yeah, exchange is in the name. So if you want to exchange it between different hardware or like in your factory, you will buy maybe 15 edge devices at once. And then later you want to have a new line, but the same hardware is not available anymore. You will need to buy a new one. So then it might be nice to have an ONNX version of your model that you can deploy to all the different ones. Or what would be even better is that you have like a software stack above the edge devices that can deploy models to all of your edge devices that you have in the factory in the same like framework or something. So something like ONNX must be one of the best way to approach this.
Maybe, but ONNX, is it a, there's, I'm assuming this is an open question, that ONNX doesn't cater to every hardware, right? Like if I want to do a mobile app like iPhone, I mean, even if it's iPhone, Android, that's already a big difference. I cannot use ONNX models there, right?
Well, I think you can exchange it to the different ones.
So it's like an intermediate step layer.
Yeah, it's like an intermediate standard or something. You can, if you make a new like layer, like a custom layer or something, you can probably like find some way to put it in an ONNX file. But I say probably, I don't know. Sometimes it's weird and people come up with very weird stuff that's very effective. So, yeah.
I'm not the most technical person here around the table, but I think the evolutions in both the AI models are going so fast that it will be difficult to come up with a standard tool set that can support that evolution. And for keeping up and being very flexible on that level, you will need flexible hardware, you will need flexible software as well. And I think it's going to be very difficult, given the speed of change that we currently see, to see standards being shaped in the next couple of years.
Yeah, indeed. I think that's a good way to phrase it. I think we're looking for like a standard. So the language of AI is Python, and Python is a bit higher level, let's say. You don't have as much control of what's happening closer to the hardware. In other languages like C++ and Rust and all these things, you do. And then you see some, for example, I don't know, like you have different subjects. So you have arrow format, which is basically a way to store tables. And then from that format, you can actually do all sorts of fun stuff, right? But you need to be able to have access to the memory underneath. So I'm even wondering, like, I mean, I think it's either someone that has this skill set will be able to write something that would expose for Python developers, or the Python developers, the people that really want to do stuff on the edge, will actually need to upskill to get these lower level languages, which I find it less likely, to be honest.
So you have, in terms of the frameworks, there's still in development. There's quite some evolution, but it's still in development in terms of skills. it's mostly the same as today, but you might need to upskill or then you need some packages to facilitate some of the work, which is maybe a more likely evolution. In terms of MLOps, how easily is it to apply your MLOps best practices on Edge?
I think there's... So for MLOps in general, like on the cloud, if you look it up, you're going to kind of see the same things. For on the Edge, you're not going to see so much. So I feel like it's still kind of up in the air. I think the MLOps is more of a set of principles, really, right? It's not really like you have to do A, B, and C. So I think you can still try to apply these principles on Edge devices as well. But there's no clear roadmap, you know, like you do A, B, C, and then that you're in a good place for MLOps on the Edge.
I see a pretty steep learning curve with most of our clients when being confronted with Edge technology, and that sits usually on the software side of things, because you're talking about embedded software here. That's a skill set that not a lot of companies had until this point, right? So it's quite new, and it brings new challenges.
Yeah, maybe controversial opinion number two. It's kind of 1.5, because it's kind of the same, to be honest. No, I agree. I fully agree. And I think that's like a machine learning engineer, the role, right, was about ML models and stuff, and related to my first controversial quote unquote. It's getting easier and easier to build, to have models, not to build them. I mean, even to build them with auto ML and whatnot. But I think for if the challenges that are still not solved are on things related to Edge, and I think for those things, you need to be more like quote-unquote hardcore software developer guy. This is not the skill set that you traditionally see on machine learning engineers, right? Even thinking of the programming languages, you know, Python is the language of AI. But even though like it's only that because libraries like PyTorch or TensorFlow are actually implemented in C++ with a layer of Python on top, right? So it's like the people that are super good at these things, they know everything ins and outs, they're going to have a steep learning curve, like you said, to transition to embedded devices and whatnot.
Because I get now you... When you build a model, you build it on your cloud instance and it's there. Now you need to think about like software developers when they build applications and you release it to the app store, but then you need to push updates. And how are you going to keep all the devices up to date? What happens if one doesn't update? Those are all new challenges that you will need to consider, right?
Yeah. There's device management, there's health monitoring, but also there's the security aspect, which is, of course, very important when working with Edge devices. So also that is pretty new, I guess, for most of the people.
I can imagine if you find a security bug on your phone, you need to update immediately. If on a device, a self-driving car, you detect a bug and you want to deploy it immediately to all cars for safety reasons.
Yeah, but
those are all new challenges. I mean, that's something that an ML engineer to date was not confronted with.
Yeah, indeed. And that's what I mean. I'm trying to be controversial here, but I'm trying to be controversial here. I'm wondering like how the role of a machine learning engineer would be really like in a year, 2 years from now. Like if people are really going to gravitate more towards this Edge AI types of problems, then I think the skill sets, how the role is going to look, will change as well.
But I think it makes sense. And if I look, they saw some nods. So I think indeed it will evolve. We'll see. If you say, you know, building the models is no longer the tricky part or less tricky than it was before, because you have all these accelerators, you have these things you can start from, and the responsibilities will shift, and there will be maybe more software development capabilities, there will be more additional capabilities required, right?
Yeah, and I think there are still some cases that you may need to really, you know, build a new model and everything, but the tendency is that all the use cases are going to be covered, I think. So you heard it here first.
We've got the primeur, as we say in French. If we're talking forward-looking, because you kind of segued us into that, how do you guys see the Edge AI world evolve? Of course, more of it and more mature. But what exactly are the changes you expect?
I think there's the use cases that will evolve for sure. Today, we talked about some use cases, mainly in the industry, but we also see a lot of use cases in logistics. Things of safety features like collision avoidance in a very busy logistics environment, for example, or inventory management, picking and placing. A lot of things are going on right there, but let's say most of them are still around being more productive, being more efficient. I think the next bunch of use cases will probably be more around user experience and improving that part of life. You now have Apple with his new glasses, and that's also edge computing. And we haven't seen that many use cases that will impact user experience on all kinds of levels. So I think that's going to be the next phase.
Well, yes, I think like the glasses thing, for example, is like a very powerful one because you'll be able to train operators way faster using these kinds of glasses. And we're getting to the point where you can actually start like deploying small models on there that can show you, okay, now you take the second bolt and you put it in the right spot and not in this one. Like this is really coming. So the learning curve for a new factory worker to do things more quick or even do custom builds without being highly trained is getting smaller and smaller and smaller every day. And we're maybe 2 or 3 years away from having fully customized products made by somebody who doesn't really know how any of it works.
I think the Vision Pro is indeed the spot on example because it has its own OS, if I'm not mistaken. Vision OS or something, which means that there will be a lot of applications of which also models developed to do stuff in. You saw the little bird landing on the guy's finger? It was like in the promo video. Apparently, it has contextual capabilities. And so basically, you lift your finger and there's a little bird that lands on your finger. But that means it needs to calculate.
Yeah.
I mean, vision-wise, where's the finger and make the little bird land exactly there. So there's computation involved in that, right? So
spatial computation.
Exactly. What else?
I think maybe even like hardware-specific things, you know? I think we have some, but I think there may be even more. Like you mentioned, Visual OS, right? Apple has their processors, right? Which is not a GPU technically, but it's still like for more efficient computing for linear algebra and all these things. And also, I feel like I keep hitting this, like not necessarily edge, but I also think that like, okay, we have ChatGPT, super cool, but now it's OpenAI that has it, right? And I think first step is there's a lot of open source models now. So technically anyone can run it, but just in a GPU. So it's not everyone, right? And then I think with these techniques, you can maybe make it more accessible so you can run your laptop, you know, or maybe you just need a big CPU, you know? So I also think that that's a path forward, even for cost optimization. And I see there are even companies that specialize on these things, like open source projects, big ones that specialize in this.
Might take it back to the Vision Pro. It has a small battery extension. It only lasts 2 hours, probably because it does a lot of compute. If you can make that compute more efficient, that I guess will also make the battery life last longer and will have a lot of benefits elsewhere as well.
There will be technological innovations in the coming years for sure, like new chips, probably new types of processors, but also new type of models. But I think the real acceleration and the real innovation will just come from being creative, what we have now. And it will come from creativity of real humans, right? Not from innovation that computers make. And that's I think the most important thing here. The toolset from a technical perspective is there, and there are models, there are some operational tools, and there is some good hardware already available. And with all of that, there are so many new possibilities. And when people start to become creative and start to discover what is possible, there's going to be so many new applications soon. And I think that's the main evolution for now.
Yeah, I think too. Like, I think with ChatGPT, you already see a lot of, like, a boom of AI applications, you know? Because, like, people see that it's really cool. Let's build something with it. And I think, indeed, I think the human creativity is really, really, it's fascinating to see, really.
Are there any tools yet on like device monitoring or just model monitoring in general that have popped up? Or is this also a field that you expect will develop further as edge AI becomes more pervasive?
Yeah, there are already some tools for remote device management, like Mender. There's for sure some other good tools out there, also for deploying or managing AI models at scale. We see several tool set out there.
If you Google model monitoring, they're probably going to talk about like what's the accuracy, precision, and when it drops this and this. But I think if you're not edge environment that you don't have internet access all the time, you're not going to have the data all the time, right? So you can still have these things. And I think as soon as you have internet connection and you can send it back to the cloud, then the traditional methods still apply. But I think if you're talking about edge, and we already covered that real-time applications is when you really need edge AI, what's the latency, right? Like how big is the model? Is it fault tolerant? You know, because if you're there and you need to make a decision on the spot, you probably want to add safeguards around it, right? So I think there are other things as well that you want to focus on. It's a bit a mix between ML and just software. I think there are some tools, but I think in general, there is still space to become more mature.
And I think the roadmap for those will also be driven by what I said earlier on. It's the creativity of people that will have ideas, and those ideas will have to be supported by technology somehow. And I think it's going to happen that way. Yeah? People will come up with new ideas. They will need specific tools or software to support that, and out of that, those new tool sets you just mentioned will come. I have this example from it was a I had a call with a bunch of young guys, and they developed a robot that can guide people in a store towards a product. So if you need chocolate, it shows you where the chocolate is. It looks like a very trivial application, right? But actually, the whole idea was really cool, but only when they told me the next part of the story. Because basically what they wanted to do is to scan all the shelves on a continuous basis to check if there were empty spots, to check the pricing and sell those data to manufacturers in food and agricultural business. And that's a real business model. And the funny story was that they were their mother company was in building an ERP system for food retailers. And they already for years, they kind of lacked some real-time information on inventory, on data within the stores. And they probably had this idea already for a long time, but they could not execute it. But now the technology is there. And that's what I mean. I mean, with the technology being there and some creativity, there's a lot of cool things that's going to happen.
Yeah. And it's a cycle too, right? Like, you want to do something, the technology is not there. So you build the technology to do it. And then now the technology is there, you're like, oh, but now I can use this for that. And then there's a new idea that maybe triggers another idea. And then it's like, you know, it's a circle. I'm doing a circle with my finger for whoever's listening. But
we're closing in on the end of the session. Any, because that was a quite inspirational story about, you know, how the power of creativity and how technically the building blocks are there. It's now up to the people to start using it, build upon it, continue to evolve it, and technology will follow and support where necessary and support those innovative ideas that people come up with. Any closing thoughts? Inspirational words from Marilo?
No? Yeah, you're looking at me. I don't know how much inspiration I have, but I'll just say that I think this is really cool. I think that in a way, having these models being able to run on regular devices democratizes a bit, you know, anyone can run it. I think, I mean, sustainability wise, there's a plus. I think it's an interesting challenge as well to solve. So, I'm all in. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
All right. On that bombshell, I think we can close the session. Thank you very much for participating. And I hope it was interesting for listeners. See you next episode.